You're listening to Comics with Kenobi.
It is episode number 98. We are slowly but steadily counting down, or counting up, if you will, to episode 100. So start preparing early and start your celebrations now. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Geek me all knowing box that stay open. May 4th, I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
I'm good, Matt. It's a bit chilly down here in Texas, which chilly for us means it's down below 50. I'm loving it, but everybody else is hating it.
I am sorry to hear that. We actually got a nice little dusting of snow today, about an inch and a half, but it's very, very powdery, flaky stuff, so the kids could not go sledding or anything, and it was perfect sleeping in weather, although I did not sleep in.
And see, if that happened here, you wouldn't hear trucks like that on the road because everybody would just shut down, the whole state would shut down. The grocery stores would be empty of bread, milk, and bottled water because who knows what's going to happen within the next day and a half before it melts.
That's, well, you know, the potential for the snowpocalypse is always high. Yes. One never knows.
Right. But we're getting into award seasons for the film, so I will be passing along my movie-going experiences as we go. Went to see Green Book this afternoon. Wonderful film. If you have a chance to go see it, I highly recommend it. Very funny, very touching, just a good story. Very well, performed, well directed, well written.
That is on my list of films to see. As a matter of fact, our local little one-screen not-for-profit cinema here that Bradley Cooper helps support from time to time because he's from this area. They are currently showing it, and I really intend to go and see that movie. Funny story, Jeff. I actually have 4 or 5 of those actual Green Books to which the title refers to. And I acquired them. I got them from an antique, nay, junk store when I was living in Mississippi back in 1999, 2000.
Same time I moved to Mississippi, you were moving out. I think we figured that out.
Well, the bright lights of New York City called, Jeff, and who am I to say no to New York City?
Exactly.
But I found them, and it was fascinating because I was not aware of what they were, and so I took them to a friend of mine who was familiar with the history of civil rights in the Deep South, and he explained what they were to me, and I was like, oh, my. And I even offered to, you know, to give them to him, for historical safekeeping. But he said, no, experience them, read them, and, you know, spread the word about them. And what is really interesting, I thought, was maybe it was last year or the year before, the really, really awesomely written novel Lovecraft Country came out. And, of course, for those who aren't too familiar with it, it's essentially a novel. It's by Matt Ruff, and it brings to life what I like to call the visceral terrors of life in Jim Crow America. It's set in that time frame, but it's kind of viewed through the prism, if you will, of Lovecraftian mythos and horror. As fortune would have it, the video rights, if you will, I think were picked up, and Jordan Peele is among the executive producers, as is J.J. Abrams, somebody Star Wars fans may be familiar with. So
basically, it's going to be a great film when it gets made. It's going to be a wonderful
film. And I guess it looks like it's going to be on HBO, so it looks like it may be an entire series, which is even better. It's got a great cast. I mean, you know, Anjanou Ellis and Wunmi Mosaku and Jonathan Majors are among the cast members, as is Elizabeth Debicki. If you have seen the movie Green Book and you are interested in the notion of what Green Books were, I highly recommend you check out, you know, what they were and what sort of great role they played in ensuring that African Americans in the Jim Crow era were able to find places that were welcoming havens, if you will,
right.
Ports of call in a very tempestuous time. So speaking of havens and tempestuous times, the Star Wars Flagship Monthly has by and large been firing on all cylinders since the very first issue came out 4 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been 4 years now. That's been due in part to the fact that it really hasn't changed writers very often. We had Jason Aaron, who steered it from issues 1 through 37, and then, of course, Kieran Gillen picked up with issue number 38. Well, last week, Kieran Gillen announced that, his time is drawing short. He, in his weekly newsletter, and this is why you subscribe to your favorite comics people's personal newsletters, because he just sort of dropped a very little nugget, amongst all the other news, and said that issue number 67 will be the end of the Scourging of Shu-Torin arc, and as he said, that's it for him. That's issue 67, the end of my story, and I'll be off.
And he goes on. Now quote Darth Vader when I say no.
Yeah, I had a lot of people with that same reaction. Although, oddly enough, there were a couple of people, especially on the Twitter feed, said, well, thank goodness. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah. maybe we've been reading a different Star Wars comic series. But, to each their own, that's fine. But he says, and I quote, no present plans to write anything else in Star Wars. I suspect I said all I've wanted to about these characters in comics, at least in this period anyway, end quote. And that got me really, that last sentence I found rather tantalizing. Because Marvel has been very tight-lipped, as has Lucasfilm, about what is going to happen with the Star Wars Monthly. I mean, because we are brushing up and approaching the Empire Strikes Back era, at least, cinematically speaking, in these comics. But how long can we do that? And then, that sets us up for, so do we then jump into that period between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi? I say if we do, it's going to be very brief, because the whole thrust of the monthly Star Wars comic is that we get our traditional original trilogy characters in it.
Right.
And if we go ESB to our, in that time frame between ESB and the Return of the Jedi, we have no Han. Now, of course, this does ensure that we, there are some definitely solid story arcs that we could see. We could see perhaps, the Bothans striving to find the plans for Death Star 2. We could see, as a Star Wars comic did so capably well, I thought, Leia becoming Boosh to go and find Han on Tatooine. But we could see definitely Marvel sort of expanding that hunt, how Lando, when last we saw Lando at the end of Empire, he and Chewie were pulling off of the medical frigate to go search for Han, so there could be some good solid, Lando and Chewie adventures for sure. And then of course we could also see what Luke was up to.
Yeah. What someone is referred to as Bad Mamma Jamma Luke that we saw in Return of the Jedi.
Bad Mamma Jamma Luke. Yeah. So I mean, that would make a lot of sense, but then again, as I've said, we would be missing Han Solo, and it seems to me it would sort of take away from the characters of the book to not have Han as part of the core team. But at the same time, we do know that Han is eventually found. I posit that if they do this, and they do actually go post Empire Strikes Back, and that era between it and Return of the Jedi, that it would be a very fertile ground for coming up with some new characters for the canon. Much like we got Sana Staros and Dr. Aphra, we could get new characters. And that, to me, I think would mean a great deal to me, at least personally. And I think it would also kind of sort of hew to what Marvel did with Volume 1 of the Star Wars comics, wherein, although, the rules of canon were a lot looser then. just the fact, because that's the one thing I've been really liking about the comics is we get these new characters. Who's to say we couldn't get some stories about Hera in between Empire and Return of the Jedi, or, something on Yvonne Verlaine, for example, because, we still don't know what happened to, we don't know Yvonne Verlaine's ultimate fate. It just would make a lot of sense, I think, to explore those characters, but also to create these new characters. But regardless, Kieran, I think, will be missed. I mean, he, let's not forget, he wrote the first 25-issue Darth Vader series. Had a hand in creating Dr. Aphra, had a hand in crafting a lot of saga related supporting material. I mean, it's through him, through the Vader series that we found, that Boba Fett knew who Skywalker was.
Right.
And told Darth Vader, we had him on, of course, the start and the launch of the Dr. Aphra run. With that whole series, so we definitely cannot forget that. we would be remiss in doing so. But at the same time, there's also, gosh, as he guided Aphra through so many twists and turns before handing off the reins to the very capable Cy Spurrier. No announcement on who's going to replace him as the writer. No announcement on what this is going to mean for the artists at the moment, because they're swapping between Andrea Brocardo and Anuel Unzueta. But if I had my druthers, which I don't, I would really like to see a rather qualified someone write this the series by the name of Jodi Hauser, because with what she's been writing on Age of Republic and her previous Star Wars work has been nothing short of brilliant.
Agreed. So hopefully, if you figure out where you misplaced your druthers, you can locate them, and then you'll have your druthers, and that will happen.
Exactly. So there you go. In other news, the lads from a Star Wars comic are back.
Woo!
The new issue will be out January 25th. So looking forward to that one a whole lot. That's going to be, I think, good news for everybody involved. They did not have an issue in December, which is fine. We will be more than happy to cut them some slack. But still, they have not been forgotten, nor will they ever be forgotten. And of course, Star Wars Resistance is returning to the small screen. Looking forward to that. If you have not seen the mid-season teaser trailer, if you will, highly recommend it. I watched it online and was baffled by the fact that when I went on to Fandango to order the tickets to go see it in the theater, I came back down to Earth and realized it's just a TV show. But man, this preview was cinematic in scope. We get the First Order. We got General Hux doing his speech. So this second half of the season is going to be nonstop bonkers, I think. And of course, it has already been renewed for a season two.
Nice.
So that is really good news. And then I think also in terms of TV, it looks like The Mandalorian is going to probably have episodes that are about 45 to 48 minutes in length. So, ostensibly, if you will, in the old parlance, an hour-long show.
Right.
But
Once they had the commercials, yeah.
yeah. So, well, I guess I don't even know. I guess I
Well,
know. Well,
if they ever sell it in syndication or something, that they aim for them to be about an hour long.
So yeah, so a good week. Other than that, not much to report about the Star Wars comics. The December sales stats have not been compiled yet, or at least at the very least, have not been released by Diamond. So we hopefully will get those this week. And then I think if we follow the timeline correctly, next week we should start getting the solicits for, I want to say, April. So, which reminds me, by the way, based on the way Star Wars has been coming out, my educated guess, which is not very educated, would put Kieran Gillen's last Star Wars issue out in May.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, but we'll see how it goes.
Yes, we shall. So, yeah, we do have three books to discuss this week. We have Destroyer Down number 3, the conclusion of that arc. We have Star Wars number 59, as you mentioned. Wait, 59? Yeah, 59.
Yep, Star Wars 59.
And we have the Age of Republic Jango Fett issue. So let's start with Destroyer Down number 3, which comes to us from IDW Publishing.
Definitely.
And this is again part 3 of 3, and we basically have two stories, and covers again have been a lot of fun on these. I really like the main cover where you get the shadow of the droid reaching down for Rey, who's holding up
Sarko Plank.
Sarko Plank. But
That's a good one.
the other covers are a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, that's a John. It looks like is that a John Somarriva cover, I think?
That sounds right.
I think that's who it is. Let me double check here, because I don't want to give the wrong name. So yeah, the first cover by Derek Charm, and the second cover is by John Somarriva. So.
And then these again continue, written by Scott Beatty, and the same team that we've had, right? Derek Charm doing the art on the Destroyer Down, and then the ghost ship, the penciler, and Inkers were. I'll let you do the names. I never get the names right.
All right. Well, on the Ghost Ship, it's also, like you said, written by Scott Beatty, but penciled by John Somarriva and inked by Sean Parsons, with colors by Matt Herms. And let us let it be known here and wide, near and far, that Tom B. Long handled the letters on both stories. And both stories were edited by Peter Adrian Baravash and Elizabeth Bry. And then the editors were Bobby Kernow and Denton J. Tipton. And we jump in to Destroyer Down, Part 3. And we are back on Jakku, of course. And we have an Imperial security droid. This is not K2SO. Or is it? I don't think it is, obviously, well, no, given the time frame.
Yeah, the time frame, but it is a K2 droid.
It is. And then K2 is, doing the rounds, even though the ship is out of commission and been out of service, the droids are still doing their programming, and Sarko Plank is hiding behind, an object, if you will, trying to avoid it, but gun is drawn a long time ago on Jakku, in the last days of the Galactic Empire. The ship guards the Empire, and I guard the ship, says the K2 unit. They say that most Star Wars destroyer command deck officers went down with their ships to prove their loyalty to Emperor Palpatine. That's stupid.
Right.
And then, of course, we are caught up because we have, a couple of the trespassers. Sarko Plank, where are you? Please help us. And the K2 droid, you are trespassing aboard the Star Destroyer Spectral, Origin Point, Kuat Drive Shipyards, Experimental Heavy Weapons Division. This way. No, this way. By Imperial law, interlopers, stowaways, and or rebel saboteurs face immediate incarceration, conscription into Imperial service, and or summary execution, respectively.
That was the part that got me, the respectively. And of course, they both reply with, we aren't any of those things. We're scavengers. Well, by Imperial law, thievery is punishable by immediate expulsion. So they're just not going to win with this. And I love the image of him just dragging them both with one arm behind him, the droid, as he's walking off. So he's gonna put them through out the nearest airlock, which they're both acting like they're worried. But I guess really they don't have a whole lot to worry about since they are on Jakku. They're just going to drop into some sand, we assume.
We would think, yeah. So, and of course, the K2 unit is not aware of this. And it's funny because, they're talking to each other. Don't hold your breath, brother. Pray the merciless cold get you first. And obviously, I guess they're trying just to play the part so that the K2 droid is, left unawares. Through the powers invested in me by Admiral Ektal Torres, former commander of this vessel. For the crimes of attempted theft and other assorted skullduggery, you are committed to the vacuum of space.
And Plutt, Unkar Plutt is watching. What's this? And can I just stop and say skullduggery is one of my favorite words?
It's an awesome word.
Yes, it is a great word. And from there, we cut back to the Y-Wing fighter where we last left Rey, and she's monologuing to herself, catching us up on what's happened. She got shot, but she's okay because they shot a bunch of Bacta all over her. She finds a fuel pump that Unkar Plutt has been wanting, but can't leave well enough alone. She says, maybe there's time for maybe just once. She gets in the cockpit and starts playing pilot. She realizes there's no helmet and no plucky astromech droid because, as we know, Zeet in the last issue, sacrificed himself nobly to get the message out. And I love that she's Captain Rey, Wing Commander of the Jakku Irregulars, is what she terms herself. And I love this. We're getting some insight into her because she's imagining that she's in this space battle being chased by a TIE fighter. And she realizes in her fantasy that a rock has hit the cockpit and it's starting to crack. And she says, okay, so maybe not the rocks aren't all that small. Time to put her down, I suppose. Playtime's over. And then we realize, oh, no, that's the K2 droid bashing away at the cockpit trying to get her out because he's calling her an interloper, a stowaway, or a rebel saboteur. Sorry, that spiel again. Great reveal.
It is a great reveal, and I like that because it captures the essence of Rey, who is very much a dreamer on Jakku, but also very pragmatic. And of course, this is a great line: "Ghost ship, indeed."
Yeah.
The only things haunting this wreck are battered old droids. Ow! And the K2 gets a hold of her. The ship guards the Empire, and I guard the ship. I like this mantra. It's a good mantra for a droid. You rusting heap, there's no Empire. Just the first or... Oh, never mind. Zap.
Zaps him, yeah. And then he says vandalizing and destroying Imperial assets because it carries severe penalties. This guy's just all about reading the Riot Act to whoever will listen.
He is. He's very rules-oriented. Obviously, this program is very much, 10, print, 10, print, 20, go to.
You have guests.
Yeah, somebody knocked on the door.
And this is where it gets interesting because he refers to himself as a fleet commander. He says any assault on a fleet commander is punishable by death. And we see some robes that look familiar, and we see a voice coming. It's Ray's voice saying, a droid fleet commander? And Sarko Plank opens fire on the droid. And he's, I love it. He says, die, droid, die. He misses. The droid grabs his gun, and he says, I mean, I yield, droid, I yield. And he can't even say, I surrender, before the guy just slaps him down and drags him off. And he says, there are no airlocks on this level, but there is an access chute to one or more trash compactors. So he throws him down. Or no, he doesn't throw him down. I can't really figure out what happens here, but they basically a lot of rations, food rations, appear.
Yeah, because these are a lot of these portions. So it looks like Sarko has been maybe... I don't know if they came out of Sarko's garments or definitely not because the way it's being described, you know, the droid's like, this is the mess hall is a mess, you know, and it's probably just food rations from the Imperial larder.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, that's all it is. And Rey, of course, thinking quickly, starts up the holograph of the pilot. I can't remember his name at the moment. Back
in the day.
No, his name. What is his name?
Oh, let's see here. Hold on, because remember he is the thrust of the first of the backup story. Yeah. So let's see here. Oh my goodness gracious, where is it?
I had it written down and Back. Yeah, his name is Back.
That's it.
Yeah, Back. And he starts with the I'm no Luke Skywalker. He says at dinner and a show, Commander Droid. You've had the appetizer. And now it's time for the main course, and she gets out her her sonic screwdriver, and does a clack clack something or other, and all of a sudden, all of the for some reason, I guess the fire suppression systems come on, and water starts spewing.
Well, I think Ray, as you say, uses the sonic screwdriver. Hi, Jody Hauser, or hi Jody. I forgot Jody's last name now. What? Whitaker, Jody Whitaker. Thank you, Jody Whitaker.
Hey, give credit where credit's due. Who gave you that assist?
My awesome wife, Alicia.
There you go.
So she activates the fire suppression system, which activates all the water sprinklers, which in turn activates all the quarter portions.
And we know what happens to those because we saw the film. One of my favorite effects from Force Awakens, it just, you know, bubbles up. And I love this. This is such a great idea. And Sarko Plank is really upset about all the food getting wasted.
Well, why wouldn't he be? I mean, yeah. That's basically
Jakku, he says. And he says, so much food, and then Ray says that you'll never get to eat. Now get up and run for your life, Sarko. And so as they're running, everything's expanding and basically just swallows up the droid.
Exactly. Yeah, I love this. Needless waste of food rations is punishable.
The ship guards the Empire. And you can almost hear him just say, and I guard... And of course, Unkar Plutt is watching. He's like, "What's happening to my beautiful ghost ship?" They run out. So Rey and Sarko run out, and he says, "Full of treasure and food, spoiled and rotting, all of it." And she throws the fuel pump to Unkar Plutt, and he goes, "But she goes, just what you wanted." He goes, "But I didn't just want a fuel pump. I wanted all of it." It just sounds. I can just imagine him whining that, and I love that Krakoom as it just collapses into the sand.
I love me a good Krakoom. I do indeed. Oh, how I love a good Krakoom. So, and then that's how we get our ending, you know, where we get the setup is, they say that on Jakku there is no greater sin than to waste food, or to be a hoarder of useful things, or to let a life debt go unpaid. On Jakku, we all struggle to survive, but we don't have to do so alone. That's what they say. And she's breaking bread with Sarko Plank.
So now they're friends. Which is good. And from there, you know, we get this nice ending to that, and that from there we go back to the ghost ship. And I've kind of gone back and forth about which version of the story I enjoy better, but this issue, I liked the Destroyer Your Down portion, but this ghost ship, the writing in this is so much fun.
It is so much fun, and it's a nice way to blend the two stories with this common thread, because, yeah, you know, bear in mind, these are two separate standalone stories, but they tie together nicely.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and back, the pilot is surrounded by stormtroopers. He says, and I'll let the surrender, you're surrounded by a lot. And he tells him, you know, what if I told you there's a squadron, a whole squadron of rebel fighters emerging from hyperspace to rescue me, and I got a thermal detonator ready to blow us all to atoms if you troopers don't stand down. And when he says he's lying, he goes, he sounds honest. Could be his accent. He says, but I think he's bluffing. I'll buy the rescue plan, but the added bomb threat just strains belief. I love this. Can we see the thermal detonator as a goodwill gesture? Who gave these guys...
These are clearly this
personality.
You can clearly tell the difference between Imperial stormtroopers and First Order stormtroopers. So Zeet sort of sneaks off, you know, and of course, you know, Box says, Zeet, go now. Overload a reactor coil or turn off all the life support systems. I just do whatever you can to scuttle the Star Destroyer.
Do whatever it is that droids do when they help, basically.
Oh, yes. So then we find, you know, Admiral Traz, we are in a temporary orbit around Jakku. Orders, sir? Show some initiative, subcommander. Fix my ship and restore full battle readiness. Where there is one rebel, more are sure to follow. The tip of the spear, blunted, floating dead like a ghost ship, and sunk by a single rebel fighter. Security droid, follow me. And I'm more than confident this is our same security droid.
Well, we know, we found out at the end that it is.
Oh, well, that we do. But even for people who have not gotten to the end yet and are just following this based
assume,
on our...
Yeah.
So, you know, like,
of course
we must...
The ship guards the Empire, Admiral.
And then we get back to the stormtroopers. I love this. You know, what if he's using... what if he's a Jedi using the Force to confuse us? How would we know? Why not just make us shoot each other? That would make sense. Jedi are extinct. You know, we all know the Ballad of Order 66 bedtime story. Oh, I love that one.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. And of course, you know, back is like, Zeke, the destroyer powered down for some reason. Listen close, I have an idea. And then that's when K2 shows up. Make way for your ship's commander, Admiral Traz. Where is he? Where's the rebel? Right here, Admiral.
And he outs himself, and General Lieutenant Back Rychik, Shepherd Squadron, New Republic Fighter Wing. I just wanted to formally introduce myself before I destroy your destroyer. And of course, you must be joking, Lieutenant. And he says, do it, Zeet. And Zeet.
Well, no, but wait, come on. Seriously, that line that the Admiral delivers, that's pure Tarkin.
Oh, seriously overestimate your chances. One fighter against an entire Star Destroyer. And he just, interrupts him, do it, Zeet. So Zeet basically pulls him out of orbit.
Uh-huh, because he activates all the maneuvering thrusters on the spectral starboard flank.
I like this line from Beck, though. He says, the only force I know is the pull of gravity that tugs like an anchor on my fighter when I edge too close to a planet's atmosphere. and then somebody chimes into Admiral Traz, we have several problems.
Oh, yeah, but that look, you know, and that muted line from Traz, you know, you pushed us out of orbit. And that's what everybody realizes, that, like you say, we have several problems.
They're
the
going
spectral
down.
Is in full orbital decay and falling fast. Engine igniters are unresponsive. And a rebel armada has emerged from hyperspace.
And I love this. The Admiral just says, all hands, abandon ship. And I love the way he's drawn there. You know, the crazy beard and mustache and everything.
Oh, it's great.
And Back is, you know, very, very adamant, very confident. He says, the Empire is over, Admiral. It's time you accepted that the New Republic has finally liberated the galaxy. And the Admiral says, preposterous. Your pitiful rebellion is merely a setback. Excuse me, I have a command shuttle to catch. You're welcome to join me as my prisoner. And I love this because the droid hangs on to him.
Won't let him go.
The security droid, the ship is lost. I must flee. And the droid says, sir, it is my directive to guard the ship to the last. If you flee, who will command the spectral to victory against the rebels? And that Back is running off and he says, that's a sticky one, Admiral. That you may could simply relinquish command to someone else, which is what happens. He promotes the droid to captain of the Imperial Star Destroyer with full rank and privileges, which is why he refers to himself as a fleet commander later on in the future, but earlier in the book. And I love this shot of the destroyer falling because you can see the gravity wells and everything.
Yeah, just knifing down to the surface.
As somebody's watching. And I love this. The Admiral finds his way to an escape pod, but it's one that that Back is already in. And he says, oh, Admiral Traz, are you surrendering? So he becomes his prisoner. And he says, Zeet, I'm sorry, unplug and get out before it's too late. But of course, we know that he doesn't. So they take off, and the Admiral pulls his blaster on him. He says, you've lost your blaster. And I love, you know, Back is just very defiant. He says, you're the one who lost the whole Star Destroyer, Admiral Traz. But maybe you didn't hear me over the din of all your crew jumping ship in the hangar bay. I'm a shepherd. And in the end, a shepherd always finds his flock, as we see the entire, almost looks like the entire rebel fleet pulling out of hyperspace. And instead of the end, it says just the beginning. What a great way to end this story.
Wasn't that awesome? Because now we have a couple of characters that are out there in the open for us to play with as readers. You know, because, you know, their story is not over. It is literally just the beginning. And of course, then it ties in nicely to the events of Jakku. You know, I mean, so, you know, we're tying into stuff from the Aftermath, the final novel of the Aftermath trilogy, you know, somewhat tangentially related to the events of the Lost Stars novel. You know, it just goes on and on and on. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So there's always, you know, there's always a chance we might could see them again, you know, in some short shape, form, or fashion.
Absolutely. So yeah, if you didn't get a chance to read this when it was when it came out with Loot Crate, and you've been waiting until the trade comes out, I think when the trade finally does come out of this, it's going to be a recommended buy for me. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Definitely, definitely. Now, I really did enjoy Star Wars number 59, although thematically and tonally, it was not to my mind. It just wasn't, you know, like as impressive as some of the previous issues have.
Exactly.
It's almost like it's a holdover issue.
It is. It did not rise to the level of the cover, because I love this cover with Han Solo having a showdown with somebody on the planet. It's just a lot of fun. There's even a tumbleweed in the background going past. I don't know if you noticed that.
I saw that. Yeah, I thought that was pretty kind of. That's, you know, very, very much a, you know, you know. You know, Star Wars has sometimes been identified as a space western, and I think this sort of really ties in and you know, and signaling, you know, sort of like a tip of the hat to that one. So
right.
Anyway, this is The Escape Part 4, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Anuel Unzueta, colors by Guru EFX, letters by VC's Clayton Cowles. The cover artist is Jamal Campbell, and of course there were variant cover artists, and that was John Tyler Christopher with an action figure, as well as Lionel Francis Yu and Marta Gracia. Tom Groneman is the assistant editor, and Mark Panicia is the editor. And we are, you know, obviously this is after the betrayal by Queen Trios. We are on Hooban. You know, basically this colony, if you will, set up by Thane Marcona.
Now, let me ask you something. Is Thane a title or is that his name?
I think it's his name.
That's what I assume. But if you're reading the scroll, it says the young Jedi has grown closer to the Thane and his daughter Tula.
Well, I'm wondering, well, it might be a title. That might could be a title.
It doesn't seem to be a title anywhere else. I think this is probably just a mistype just, on the scroll.
Perhaps just maybe it's a copy editing error.
Yeah.
So we open up. We're on Thane Marcona's estate on Hooban, and Han, you know, as we, you know, where we left last issue, you know, because, you know, we'd left with Leia showing all these diagrams about how to scourge Shutoran, you know, to destroy it. And so Leia is
Han thought he was going to get lucky.
He did. He really
asked him back to his asked him back to her room, and he thought. And she gets there, and, you know, of course she's been plotting her revenge against Shu Tarun.
Oh my!
And so she's explaining all the data she has to Han, and I love this because he says, "Why didn't you tell Luke?" She goes, "I didn't want to give false hope." And I love Han says, "Huh, false hope, that I get. I mean, all these plans are very impressive, but it's not what I was expecting." Says, "And what exactly were you expecting?" He goes, "Well, late at night, a lady's chambers." And I love her reaction because we don't even see her say anything, but she just gets this grimace on her face, and the next shot is her shoving him out the door.
Randy Han.
So. He says, "Chewie, in every situation, I wish you were here, but I'm glad you missed that," as he's walking off.
That was a great line. I like that. It was a nice little nod, you know, to the relationship that the two of them share.
I do. So. I love the way the two of their relationship is displayed in this story, outside of everything else. But
it's important because think about it. You know, every other time we were exposed to Han and Leia in the movies, it was very quick, very actiony, and. You know, and the velocity of their relationship was propelled by the fact that he was being about to be frozen in carbonite.
Right.
and they were stuck in an asteroid field being chased by the Empire. You know, this gives us a little more leeway, if you will, to explore, you know, how much on each other's nerves they have gotten, both in a good way and a bad way.
Yeah. And the next sequence kind of encapsulates my issues with this issue. Luke is talking to Tula, and she gives him a talking to, gives him what for about activating the beacon. Because if you remember the last issue, she she directed MK, the droid, to help him activate it, but she kept saying, I hope you'll make the right decision, leaving it entirely up to him. So, of course, he activates a beacon, and then she gets pissed off at him. To which I hate that. I don't, it doesn't make any sense. And then she explains why she didn't want him to. And I keep thinking to myself, maybe if you had made him aware of all of this ahead of time, instead of assuming he was going to come to it on his own, you wouldn't be in this predicament, you know?
Well, it's a bit of a loyalty test, if you will. You know, I mean, that's what it boils down to, you know? So yeah, you know, it is kind of on her, but you know, Luke is so precision focused on trying to get everybody off of Hooban because he wants to get back into the fight. So I can understand why
he is the Poe Dameron from The Last Jedi in this story.
A really good analogy. That's a really good reference.
I had the same problem with that as I do with the way it was handled in The Last Jedi. If you know, if Leia had trusted him and said, look, this is what I've got going on. Of course, she probably didn't think in a million years that he was going to actually activate a beacon. She didn't think about him being that proactive. So, you know, this is a matter of Luke growing up quicker than everybody thinks, but much like Anakin, without the proper supervision. So he makes rash decisions that are going to end badly for those around him.
Well, he does. And remember, he's just a farm boy from Tatooine.
And he's a Skywalker. So, yeah.
Yeah, and gosh,
there are two options. He's always going to choose the wrong one.
Exactly. He's quite impetuous. He's an impetuous boy. Very, you know, and you can't lose sight of that fact.
No.
So, I mean, you know, despite everything he's been through so far, which, albeit, you know, you have to admit, is a great deal, but he is still that young kid from Tatooine.
Right, and this, you know, there's not been a whole lot of time that's passed. So, the next day, Leia explains it. We get the end of the conversation where she's explaining everything to him, and she says, I'm sorry I kept it from you. He says, why didn't you tell me anything earlier? It was driving me crazy. I had to be sure. After Trios, I wanted to be careful. And in the middle of all this, Han bumps into somebody, and we get another... This is just really stupid. I'm sorry. I think this is so stupid. He bumps into somebody, so instead of apologizing, the guy says, no, you don't get to say sorry on Hooban. And Han says, well, if buying a drink and apologizing isn't good enough, what do you fellas do? And I love the reveal because they're outside clearly about to have a duel. He goes, a shootout over this? I've seen you people get into fights over the strangest things, but this? You have to be kidding me.
Well, you know, you also have to realize, you know, this is very much a war. This is a mercenary warrior culture, you know, and that's and people forget that. And you know, so it stands to reason that this reaction is not at all surprising. I mean, it's a very, you know, perhaps maybe hyper masculine. Is that a proper term?
Well, it's definitely hyper masculine. It's also hyper stupid. It just seems like a trope. It seems like a very easy trope and a very convenient trope.
See,
to
and,
me.
And here's the thing, it is a trope, and this is why this, you know, I'm not saying this is a bad issue, because it's not a bad issue, but it's almost perhaps like they just didn't have enough story to focus on Leia's planning to, you know, to destroy Shutoran. And so this was almost, this feels like filler.
Exactly. It feels standard. And that's part of the problem is that when you've been reading a book and you've got a creative team that is firing on all cylinders, when they produce a book that just seems standard or stock or generic, it stands out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, that's true.
And I, you know, the fact that I'm saying this is, to me, this is not a good issue because it's not up to their standards says a lot about the standards that they have given me, the expectations that they've given the reader. So I think it's not a great issue, but it's born out of the fact that it stands next to so many other really good issues that they've taken the easy way out here. But I do love the way that they resolve it. I do love it because Han basically says, "Is that a rabbit over there?" The guy looks and he stuns him. He doesn't. He hits him, so he stuns him. And I like that Tula. She says, "You didn't have to use stun, though. I would expect a lot less of the Marcona to turn their backs on you from now on." And he said, well, I wasn't going to kill some loudmouth. Hell, if I shot just folks just because they had a bit of a lip, Luke would have lasted 5 minutes. And I love this because Luke says, hey, and Han says, tell me where I'm wrong. So again, you know, we have these great moments in it that remind me, oh yeah, this is a good team that's working on these. But, you know, and Tula defends him. She says, we're not cowardly people, just the opposite. Our family history has taught us a lot. To know who you're fighting with and to know what you're fighting for. And I think we all know each other better now. So this has all been like you said, kind of not loyalty tests and just feeling one another out.
It has been. And that's kind of what these are. And it's, you know, and of course, they're not passing these tests very well, even though, like you say, it's funny because we're seeing almost like twin loyalty tests to help augment the story. You know, the loyalty test that Leia is trying to implement, the loyalty test that Tula is trying to implement. And it just, you know, it's just like, eh, whatever. So it's just kind of skewed, I think, in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. The next scene I like where Tula and MK have this exchange, and she talks to her dad. Her dad comes in and they confer, and she says, "It was as we thought. I fear they will risk everything for what they desire," and which to me seems unfair because you're talking about just asking these three people to just come in and accept your way of life. Give up everything that they've known, and you're not giving them any information. If this is the turning point for the story, I don't like where it's headed. But I think it's given us some interesting scenarios later on in the book that we'll get to. But I love that Thane's response is, "Well, very well. We know. We must have our contingencies prepared. Be ready." And so at dinner. He notices conversation is stilted today. "I sense some stress. What's on your mind, Luke?" He goes, "I'm worried." And so he outs the fact that he's sent this beacon out. And Leia, actually, no, I'm sorry. Thane does.
Yes.
He says, that's a lot of hostility you kept bottled up. Is this about the transmitter Luke built? Don't be too churlish, Tula, because she's sort of rude, and he chides her for it. And that's his way of outing Luke. And Leia says, "Luke did what?" And he tells her what happened. And I love that she gets mad at Luke. She goes, "Wait, after all of your I should have trusted you nonsense?" He says, "I'm sorry, I couldn't just stand waiting anymore. What have you been playing at, Marcona?"
Yeah, and so, you know, Luke is trying to shift here. And, of course, Marcona's like, "You have been testing my character every minute you've been here, Luke. You arrived from nowhere mysteriously, full of secrets, and even carrying a lightsaber. Clearly, it would only be prudent for me to test you, too. We found out a lot, and then, of course, MK comes in. "I'm sorry to interrupt, Thane Marcona, but our sensors seem to indicate a ship coming to land in the village. Its transponder is dampened, so we can't be sure of its identity." And, of course, you just that single voiceless panel, you can tell everybody knows that it's trouble.
Yeah.
Everybody knows. And, of course, he says, "Tula, would you keep our guests company? It falls to me to welcome the newcomers." And, then, as he leaves, we get the recriminations here, with Tula. "Spying would have, were you spying on me, Tula? Spying would imply effort, Luke. I was simply your friend as best as I was able, and nothing I have said has been a lie." And then, of course, we cut to the Thane approaching what clearly is an Imperial shuttle.
Yeah, this is bad.
And then, of course, I like Luke, it could be Sana or Rebels, and Leia responds, "Or anyone, Luke.
This was risky, yeah." And I love that Han says, "Hey, just relax and be ready. We'll know soon enough." It's like, nothing we can do about it now. Let's, ever the pragmatist, is nothing we can do about it now. Let's just get ready for whatever's going to show up. And I love this reveal because we don't see, because he says, "Welcome to you, but now, friends, if you can stop terrifying the locals, I'd love to see how I can help you." And he comes back in, he says, "MK, we have more guests." And Tula says, "Well, Luke, we shall see what trouble you brought to our world." And MK walks out and says, "Ah, good evening. So many. We'll have to open the West Wing, mister." And Luke says, "No," and you can kind of see on the right-hand side of the panel, looks like a stormtrooper helmet.
Yeah.
And the stormtrooper says, "You don't need individual introductions, droid. Just call us Scar Squadron." And I love this reveal, because, yeah, this is just bad news.
The gang's all here again. Here. The gang's all here again. So, and then, of course, the lead guy. "And the guests you're harboring are rebel scum we've been chasing halfway across the galaxy." And this is where it got really real to me. And then, because the thing is, "Our guests? Rebels? I'm horrified. I had no idea. What rebels are these?" And Luke immediately, "This is my fault." And then, of course, that's where, he breaks it down. "Primarily Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo." And, of course, he's just like, "Huh." And, is he playing? Is he being coy or not? Interesting. "Well, I'm not exactly familiar with those names. You're sure you're not mistaken? it's not because of your beacon, Marcona, was blocking, you know, because, you know, the Tula says, you know, tells Luke, look, you're off the hook because, you know, your signal is being blocked. But, you know, they're not here because...
Yeah, they blocked it. So, nothing actually got out.
So, yeah, and then Luke goes, you know, then how did they find us? And then this was just devastating. No, we know they've been here, as we've got a damn good lead. Took some convincing, but interrogator droids are all kinds of persuasive, and it's Sana Staros under that hood, and she has clearly been tortured.
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not good at all.
We has a lightsaber. He lights it. He says, and if your guests don't turn themselves over, their friend gets a lightsaber right through her chest. And Thane says, that means that Leia and friends, I was unsure of their surnames. And he says, drop it. It was not him saying drop it. Han is, or, I don't know who says it, Han or Leia or somebody says drop it. And she says, you let Santa go or we'll drop you where you stand, Creel.
That's Leia. Leia's saying that.
Leia's saying that. And Han says, I thought we'd seen the last of you on Crate. He goes, well, thanks. It takes more than that to slow us down, Solo. And we know you well enough to know that you'd never open fire when you've got a friend out here. So they're using her basically as, you know, kind of as a human shield.
Oh, yeah.
And Thane is, you know, he's trying to calm things down. He, you know, tells them, you know, Hoobin hospitality remains. We surely can find a way through this that doesn't involve blasting holes in my lovely mansion. And he says, Tula? She says, certainly, father. She pulls out a gun and stuns Han and Leia. And I love, she says, you are on Hoobin. You will act according to the martial code of the Marcona. Please trust me. This is your best chance to Luke. So he stops, you know, flips his blaster. And the Creel says, thank you for your cooperation. Take the rebels and Thane stops because I'm afraid you don't understand. And this is where I'm talking about where this actually did get interesting. I like where they're going with this. He goes, you are all my guests. I simply don't wish to have a firefight destroy my property. We can settle this in the manner of Hoobin. And Creel says, so what's to stop us, say, just slicing you down, burning the place to the ground and taking them? And he says, well, there's an entire armed settlement between you and your ship. You surprise them, they'll be armed and ready by now. And you may be a little young to remember, but the Clan Marcona are not exactly without their martial merits. He says, so how do you do it on Hoobin? He says, on Hoobin we have a fondness for trial by combat, which we've already seen.
Exactly.
So I suppose you can forgive that for setting that up, but at the same time, I didn't need the other scene. He says, are you both game, or would you forfeit your hospitality? And of course, Luke and Creel both agree. Luke lights his saber, and he says, okay, well then, you're ready, gentlemen. Be sporting. And they cross swords, and that's where we get the end of the issue. So next issue, we're going to see a fight between Luke and Creel. We're going to find out just how much lightsaber skill Creel actually has.
Yes, we are.
Especially with that next cover is great because it's basically the same shot in reverse, except this time it's raining, and there's fire in the background. I don't know how that works, but it's art, so I'll let it go. But yeah, like I said, this is really kind of an uneven issue for me. Ended strongly. I liked a lot of the stuff in it, but a lot of it just seemed like you called it filler. A lot of it seemed like filler, and it seemed to take a strange road to get where it was going. To me,
there were a lot of twists and turns, and those twists and turns were, I thought, fairly numerous, and we didn't need so many of them.
Right.
You know, that's not to take away from the overall effect. I mean, you know, because it still does give us a really great effect. It's just that, you know, instead of three or four turns, we could have done this in one or two turns.
Right. Yeah. We know that nobody trusts anybody else. So
oh, yeah.
Let's just get to the good part. So, like I said, that I'm anxious to see where the story is going to go. I'm sure that they're going to take it somewhere next issue that I can't predict, because they always do. But we'll have to wait until next month to find out.
Yes, we will. But, you know, that's okay. That's not a problem. Well, for later this month, I guess. But, you know, since right. It's been coming out almost bi-weekly, but still, you know, it's not bad. It was a good story, but, you know, not everything can be perfect. And that's fine.
Yeah, not everything can be perfect. You know, the Age of Republic books so far have been, like you said, gradually ramping up in quality. We have one more this week, Jango Fett.
And
this is called Training.
This was a good one. Oh my gosh, this was so good. I really enjoyed this a lot. Wow.
Well, again, this sort of goes, you know, the assumption is that each of these books is going to give us insight into a character from the era that we're familiar with, but it's going to give us a little more insight into who they are or why they are the way that they are.
Yeah, very
And
much so. And
this
that's
certainly fits the
and they have
bill.
nailed it. Oh, this one does. This is Jango Fett in quote training, written
Although,
by
hey,
Joe.
it could have easily been called Boba Fett, but anyway, we'll get to
Or
that.
could have been, could have been called Take Your Kid to Work Day.
Right.
Written by Jody Hauser. Art is by Luke Ross. Colors by Jabba Tartaglia. Letters by VC's Travis Lanham. The cover artist for the main cover was Paolo Rivera. The variant cover artists, and there are a lot, In-Hook Lee, Lionel Francis Yu, and Jesus Abertoff, and Mike McCone and Guru EFX. Doug Chang did the concept design variant cover. Anthony Gambino is the production designer, and of course Mark Panaccia is the editor, and Tom Groneman is the assistant editor. And we just start out, I think, this is really kind of cool. We start on Telerath. Luke Ross has got this great mark for drawing crowd scenes, and this is, we're in a cantina. Again, lots of different creatures and aliens. We see a Six Eyes from Solo, a Star Wars Story, at the bar, and then of course we come out and we have a Rodian. We have three bounty hunters sitting there talking to each other.
We have a Rodian, we have a Gand, and what is the little guy?
I forget. Yeah, because he was in the cantina scene of The New Hope.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's either Kabe or Muftak. I can't remember which one he
oh,
is.
No, he's a Kabe. He's not a Muftak, because like the Muftaks are the real big white ones.
Okay.
With the little straw things that kind of look like abominable snowmen. So. And they are just, they're setting things up and chatting, and and they're setting the stage for the story to come.
Right. Yeah. That we get a lot of background. They're tracking a runaway, and they figure out that Jango is doing a job. And I love this because it says, I don't think any of us are the ones we should. I don't think any of us are the ones should feel insulted, because the little guy says, "Happy for every credit." It just feels a little insulting because I think it's overkill. Three of them to track down a runaway, and I love that the Rodian says, "I don't think any of us are the ones who should feel insulted." Not sure why he'd even take a job like this, and I'm thinking, "Oh, who could that be?" And I love this that we're getting this voiceover while we're seeing Jango in action, and we know it's Jango because the book is called Jango Fett. But he's taking out the speeder of a some important person, and takes them out. He says, and they talk about the fact that from what I hear, he got himself a sweet gig, steady work with some mystery client. Rumor is they have deep enough pockets that to be his only client, but he's still taking other jobs. I guess the itch never really goes away. And so they order another round, and the Gand says, "Do you think someone with his rep could actually show up on..." Oh, time. And so he shows up, and they introduce themselves. The Rodian is named Nilda. The Gand is Rin, and the little Muftak is Tiver.
Not Muftak. Kabe, thank you.
Kabe. I always assumed that was their names. It was the characters' names, not their species. But anyway... this guy's name is Tiver. The little guy's name is Tiver. And, Boba walks out from behind Jango, and he says hello, and they all scream, "Something's following you!" And Jango introduces him. "This is my son Boba. He'll be helping us on this job, part of his training."
No, it's not Kabe. Oh my god, they're Shadrafon. It's a Shadrafon. Kabe is the name.
That's what I thought. That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? Muftak is the name. It's Talls. Muftak is a Talls. Kabe is a Shadra fan.
Okay, and that's what this little
duh.
Guy is. Okay, yeah,
yes.
Duh, Matt. Gosh, don't you know anything?
I don't. Evidently not. Evidently not.
And so he says, "This is my son. He'll be joining us to part of his training. I assume none of you have a problem with that." Nope. Sounds good to Rin. Honored to meet the next generation. It's great. The wit in this is great.
Isn't it great though? And it captures the it captures the attitude of Jango very much, I thought. So.
And so as they're taking off, I love this back and forth between Boba and Jango. Boba saying, "I've even heard of any of them. Why can't we just work with Cad Bane or Ara Sing or Zam Wessel? All names we recognize," so that's a little bit of fan service there.
But it's also appropriate, I think, because
it is absolutely. But
those names are important, and those names are known, so it makes sense that they would have that.
Which is why they're not working with them, because Jango says, "Because you know them, because you have at least some idea of how they work." The unknown factor—that's the real lesson here. And I love that because Boba says, "Dad, can't you just take any job you want?" And Jango says, "I can now, but it took a long time to get there." We aren't born with our reputation. We have to earn them.
I like that a lot. I really do like that. You know, because, you know, that line right there gives us a lot of insight into the character of Jango Fett himself. You know, that he's not, he has clawed his, he has worked his way to the top. He has built his reputation through diligence and hard work and providing a service.
Yes. And yeah, and it being the best there is at what he does. So, and so I love this. If we flash back to the moons of Bogdan some time ago, and he's meeting with Darth Tyrannus, who we know is Count Dooku.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically, this is the genesis. We're seeing how he brokered the deal to become the template for
the clone army.
The clone army. There's one question, why me? There are plenty of bounty hunters out there. And Tyrannus says, but there are a few who have your reputation, Jango Fett, both in terms of skill and your discretion. Fewer still who are human.
That's a very telling line right there. And then I like how we get, you know, I can just hear, you know, I can hear Christopher Lee saying it. Think of it, a grand army of the Republic, a show of strength and power like the galaxy has never seen, all stemming from you. How many men can claim such a legacy? And then, of course, you know, the credits are good, but there's something else I'm going to need as compensation. And of course, we know what this is. You know, if you've seen Attack of the Clones, you know. I mean, you know, so it's no real mystery. And of course, we cut to the present day. Ord Mantell. Yay! I like seeing Ord Mantell.
Yeah. Ever since the bounty hunter we ran to and Ord Mantell changed my mind, and we see a bunch of bounty hunters here.
Exactly.
But the best part about this, though, is we find out who their quarry is. It's a Twi'lek, and she's meeting a Fallene.
Uh-huh.
Who, I hate to assume that they're all related, but he says, as he mentions his uncle, he has connections to the Black Sun Cartel, which could mean his uncle is Prince Xizor.
Uh-huh. Or as I always refer to him, Prince Rapey.
Right.
So, yeah, and you have to wonder, you know, it seems kind of... That's got to be who it is.
We assume they're. I think they're setting it up. But I love that as the Rodian and the Gand are sitting there, and the Rodian says, "Remember, her father wants her back alive and unharmed." And the Gand says, "Yeah. Does singed count as harmed?" And so this guy's name is Griff, and they're apparently, you know, trying to run away together. They're in love. Blah 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 blah. And they hear him say, "My uncle, he has connections to the Black Sun Cartel. I think they'd be willing to." And we hear, "So you aren't Black Sun yet? Good to know." Keeps things simpler. And Boba is there, and he says, you know, tells him, don't move. And they tell him, you know, look, we're here to take her back to her father. And Griff just runs away. Just lights out. So I guess that romance is over. And I love it because she runs, and the little guy is saying, first rule, kid, love doesn't count for much. And, of course, she says, I'm not going back, steps up on the balcony as if she's going to jump. She doesn't jump. She just loses her feet and falls. And she says, I thought our friend was watching the skies. And, of course, he was because she's falling. And here comes Jango with his jetpack to catch her. So she says, thank you. And he stuns her. And I love, amazing, show off. We did all the work. Meanwhile, Boba is just, you know, just admiringly gazing at him. And he asks his dad, he says, how did you know she was going to fall? She says, I didn't, but it was always a possibility. You have to trust your instincts on the job. So we're basically seeing, this is basically training day for a bounty hunter, is what we're seeing here.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And he says, you learn quickly that desperate people make stupid decisions, which is borne out in the very next panel, because Tiver attacks Boba. He says, here's another lesson for you, kid. Always watch your back. He grabs his gun, takes him hostage.
Can we just say, this is great art here?
Oh, it is. It's really good. There's one. I have one issue. The top panel of this page, it's digital page 14. Boba looks a little like an Oompa Loompa.
He does. His head's a little bit too big for his body.
A little bit too big. But other than that, and I think that was just I think that's a result of the hair, and the way the lines of his costume just sort of all go down. But this art, especially the art where he gets attacked, is outstanding.
Oh, it's so awesome. It just, you know, the way that Shadrafan is wielding both blades, and you see Boba's gun fly in front of him up into the air, you know, up and, you know, even in front of the middle panel. I really like that a lot.
In the next page, he's got both, like you said, both blades around Boba's neck, and he's basically holding him share his hostage for Jango's share of the profit. And clearly, with the Rodian, what's his name, Nilda, was not in on it because he says, "What are you doing? Are you insane?" But we figured that the Gand
Yeah,
was.
you want a bigger share, Nilda, or a blaster bolt in the snout? Your choice.
Okay, okay.
And
your funeral.
And Nilda, yeah, that's great because I mean, Nilda's like, yeah, all right, whatever.
So. But you know, clearly didn't have anything to do with it. And until the, you know, it says Tivers asks, "Are you going to give us a girl, or are you going to save your son?" And then we cut back to Kamino, the clones grow and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this. It says, "Not a single clone unit has fallen below combat parameters," which is funny because there's an episode, there's a story arc of Clone Wars that is specifically about, a washout. One of the ones that, what do they call them? A Bad Batch?
Bad Batch, yeah. That was a great episode, too.
It was great. It was heartbreaking and outstanding. And she says, "You must be very proud." I says, "What do I have to be proud of? Livestock bred as cannon fodder?"
Yeah,
like I said, they're your creations.
That's a pretty telling. And then, of course, we cut back to the present, and Jango's, "No, she isn't kidding around here, Fett. I'll gut him like a guest. You can try."
Just, you can try.
And then it's just, wait, what kind of maniac brings a kid to a hunt and then just, lesson for you, search your prisoners.
Because he had a second blaster.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the Gand pulls his blaster, says, "You killed Tyver, and he shoots him as well. Doesn't even hesitate. And Ellie says, "My father says clean kills are the best, but he also says regular target practice keeps you sharp."
And oof.
Yeah, this is just harsh. This kid.
I mean, ooh. And then Nilda comes in, you know, that's some kid you got there, Jango. It really takes after you, huh? As she's handing him the gun. "What do you think, Boba?" He didn't seem to be in on the coup attempt.
Now, okay, so he says he. That's where I'm getting a little confused. Is Nilda? I'm guessing Nilda is a woman.
I am, but you know, again, I'm thinking this might. Well, but you know, who really knows? I mean, in the long run, it doesn't really matter. But
right.
I mean, this may have just been, you know, this may have just sort of been a mistake that got missed in the lettering.
True.
And then the editing process.
But the important part is that he leaves it up to Boba.
Yeah, and then Neil just like, now wait just a minute, you know, hands up and everything. And
he says he didn't seem to be in on the coup attempt, but he didn't do much to stop it either.
And look at that glare. Look at that glare that Boba has.
Yeah.
That's some really good shadowing that Luke has done here.
Well, and on the next page, it's even better. I love when he holds the gun out at her.
Oof.
Just chilling, and he says he forfeits a share of the bounty, but not his life. And Neil says, "That's fair, very fair," and just runs off. And then that's where I get confused, because he refers to her as she, so maybe Boba just doesn't realize that it's a he.
No, because, you know, she says she wasn't wrong, watch your back next time. He's referring to the Shadrafan. The Shadrafan's a woman.
Okay, so that was a woman. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so then he says, "Watch your back next time." He says, "Yes, father." They're leaving, and he says, "I wasn't sure you were going to let the Rodian go." He says, "Well, I wasn't sure that I should, but I love this," because he says, "but really, it didn't seem like he was part of the plan. Ren and Tivor were partners. It made sense that they kept their betrayal to themselves." And Jango says, "Is that all?" He says, "No. I want him to tell other bounty hunters what happened today. I want the whole galaxy to know what happens when they mess with Jango Fett. I figured it's what you would do." And I'm just thinking that he's got to be so proud at this point. Because he says, "Yeah, they mess with either of us, you mean? When they mess with either of us, you mean? I wasn't the one who fired those shots." And he says, "Did I do all right then? Even though they got the drop on me?" He says, You shot well. You trusted your judgment. And you started building your reputation. A father couldn't ask for a better start to his son's legacy." This is like a bizarro feel good story, father son story. Taking his son into the family business, but the family business is murdering and killing and criminals for hire.
Right, yeah. Sorry about that.
That's all right. There's a lot going on there. The Eagles are playing. The dogs are excited.
Yep, they are.
So, but yeah, I like you said, I like this one. I think these are just getting better and better and better. The story is essential for Boba, and I think for Jango as well. It gives us a little bit more insight into both of them. And unlike some of the other things we learned about Boba Fett, this actually, I think, enhances his legacy or his reputation.
And it also sets the stage, you know, like you said, you know, it enhances Jango's reputation, but it also sets the stage for Boba's reputation. We're going to be exploring, I think, you know, as we go further into these Age of books. So
yeah, no, a lot of fun. And so what the next one is going to be, is that the next one
Well, the next one out this week is the special.
Okay, and that what is the, do we know what the focus of that one is?
Oh, we do. Yeah, we get three separate stories on it. We get a Captain Rex and Jar Jar Binks story. We get a Mace Windu story, and we get an Asajj Ventress story.
Okay, great. So that's out this week.
That's out this week, and that's the lone new Star Wars comic that's out. There is a second printing of Age of Republic Qui-Gon Jinn.
So next week's show, we'll just be discussing, do a deep dive on that one.
Which is going to be a lot of fun, because you have to remember, this is, you know, in addition, you know, to it being, you know, a one shot, it's got 35 pages, and we are going to have three stories. So that's what's going to make it even more enjoyable. It's, you know, because it's, you know, it's essentially almost like an annual, if you will. In terms of, you know, when you, because, you know, annuals, you tend to get like one or two or even three stories. But I mean, we've got writers Jody Hauser, Ethan Sachs, and Mark Guggenheim. If you're fans of the Arrowverse, you will know Mark Guggenheim. Artists include Paolo Villanelli, Carlos E. Gomez, and Casper Wingard. Looking forward to Casper's art in particular. I mean, we've got, you know, colorists are Eric Arcianega, Donal Sanchez Almara, and Chris Peter. Rod Rice has got the main cover, and Travis Lanham is editing. And we had a preview that Adventures in Poor Taste ran that we linked onto the Twitter feed. But Mace Windu is in a story called The Weapon by Ethan Sachs. Asajj Ventress is in a story called Sisters, written by Jody Hauser. And then Mark Guggenheim is writing 501 Plus One, which features Captain Rex and Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, boy.
You know, so it's going to be a good one. It's going to be really enjoyable.
Should be. So that's going to be it for the reviews this week. Again, I would recommend all three of the books this week. Star Wars issue number 59 is recommended contingent on them bringing the story home in the manner to which I expect. I'll say.
Oh yeah.
But we will be back next week to discuss the special edition of Star Wars Age of Republic. And follow us on the Twitter feed. Matt is really good about news and everything coming out there. So thank you, Matt, again, for keeping that up.
Time.
All right, so that will do it for this edition of Comics with Kenobi. Once more, I'm Jeff.
I am Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always. And fly, Eagles, fly.
Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy.
Bud, stop peeing!